A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 247. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about Ghost Boat. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, we're looking at a spooky submarine suspense from ITV in 2006. It filled 2 90-minute time slots, although the actual running time of the episodes on the DVD is about 65 minutes each. Obviously, the time slots allowed for advertising and topping and tailing announcements and so on. So, yes, ITV 2006, something for our October time viewing.
Yes, absolutely. And a little bit different from our usual Halloween season viewing. This time it's a double period piece where this 2006 show is set in 1981, steeped in the Cold War, but the characters are dealing with this recovered submarine from World War II and recreating its voyage from then.
Yes, absolutely. And they are sailing into dark, cold, and let's say dangerous waters. And the threat from World War II has been replaced by Cold War intrigue and mystery. We have Captain Burns and his crew, fairly straightforward submariners they begin as, on what seems like a straightforward voyage to the Baltic Sea. Meanwhile, Jack Hardy and engineer Cassidy are trying to trace an electrical fault, which seems to be interfering with the boat's controls at times when it doesn't seem to answer to orders. And along the way, they encounter a Russian submarine. And because it is deep in the heart of the Cold War, they begin what is apparently a traditional Cold War exercise of just seeing which submarine can ping the other first. And normally it would go no further than that as a sort of exercise between the two, I suppose, enemy ships.
Yes, but of course things are going wrong when the HMS Scorpion believes they are about to be fired upon and fires this dummy practice torpedo, which is what they had been carrying for this. But it turns out, somehow, they have live torpedoes, not practice ones. And they may have actually sunk this Russian ship in exactly the spot where the original crew had sunk a German boat in 1943. And we get into this idea of being careful not to escalate things in the Cold War, and so on. But soon, they are attacked by aircraft which appear to be World War II era Luftwaffe German fighters.
Yes, absolutely. Weird things are happening. There's this weird encounter with the Russian submarine, which goes terribly wrong. As you say, Brian, World War II Luftwaffe fighters attacking them. Captain Burns is killed in the attack, and therefore Commander Travis assumes command of the Scorpion. And all of this leads Jack Hardy, whose patchy memory of the original events from 1943 is starting to break through. He says, "The past is breaking through." And that sort of gives us a clue as to what's happening aboard the submarine. Because Travis and other members of the crew are acting strangely, almost as if they were back in World War II. And they keep referring not to their Russian opposition, but to their German opposition. Plus, on top of this, as I've said in the last episode, Commander Travis has some secret orders, about exploiting the power of the Devil's Triangle as some form of weapon. Now, this, I think, is sort of the naval intelligence hidden agenda with sending the Scorpion back to the Baltic. Of course, as is the way with these, sometimes these shows and books with which they're based on, the exact details of how they would weaponize this strange effect is never made clear, but we do begin to learn some of the sort of, as I've said, the secret mission that Travis is on.
Yes, there seemed to me anyhow to be a sense of hubris with the British intelligence in the idea that this phenomenon existed, therefore they'll be able to find some way of using it to their advantage.
Yes, that's probably, as you say, that explains it. But, of course, events on the boat are taking over and it's all becoming very, very tense down there below the waves.
Yes, and you have Jack Hardy and you have Cassidy, you know, these two older characters sort of resisting what's happening to varying degrees, and the younger characters sometimes resisting and sometimes falling into this sense of being in World War II, all of these strange things, and then this risk hanging over them that if they do attack a Russian facility, thinking it's a Nazi World War II facility, they could end up starting World War III, which is something hanging over it as well. So they are building tension really quite nicely in this.
Absolutely, yes. As you say, they may have already sunk a Russian submarine, and Travis has a plan which will, you know, if that hasn't provoked enough of an international incident, what he intends to do next with the HMS Scorpion certainly will. And as you say, Jack Hardy and to a lesser extent Cassidy have to resist. It seems that Jack Hardy is the only one who's aware that the crew of the submarine have been sort of almost taken back to their 1943 equivalents, and he even has to remind Cassidy of that from time to time. But there you go, fascinating stuff happening, and it's really building up towards a terrific climax. And of course, we've sort of touched upon the mystery of what's actually going on the Scorpion. We have to sort of speculate in a way as to who is controlling the boat and the crew. How is the past breaking through? And we have to say, I suppose, Brian, that it's not entirely, you're not going to get the full explanation of what's going on here.
That's true. And that's something I really quite like in this, actually, that a lot is left to be mysterious. And it's what we don't know that makes it so compelling.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, there's this mystery of the Devil's Triangle and whether or not there's anything actually happening there, whether that's responsible. There's a strange electrical storm, which is sort of mentioned that may have had some effect on the ship's systems. Or it could be, I suppose, even more supernatural than that.
Yeah, there's this idea that perhaps the boat itself could be haunted or could somehow have an influence that is drawing the crew members into the past or into the mentality of the past at the very least. And there's this idea that the ship is a weapon and the ship and the crew together are a weapon. And the ship wants to be used as a weapon. So you have that idea as well, that may be part of what's happening here.
Yeah, absolutely. Supernatural stuff happening. And along the way, Jack Hardy's incomplete memories, his Swiss cheese memories, as we might say, start to come back to him and answer some of the questions, not all of them, but they do enable him to retain some element of control. And he's not affected by whatever power is possessing the crew, particularly not, you know, affected as Commander Travis is, who seems to have become almost literally possessed by the ship's former captain and determined to carry out his mission to use the ship and its crew, as you say, Brian, as a weapon.
Yeah, that's right. Jack Hardy is the one who is recovering his memory and who he is and answering questions, where most everyone else is in one way or another losing himself in it, which has a really interesting dynamic to it.
Yes. And as we say, it's the Cold War. It's 1981, and they've replaced World War II tensions with a nice bit of Cold War suspense and excitement and mystery, I suppose, Brian, and done reasonably well in this show, I think.
Yes, absolutely. So I think we should now get into some of our own thoughts, more than we already have. So, Eamon, what did you like about Ghost Boat?
Well, let's start with the writing and the story. So we've got the original novel. It's adapted for the screen. And I have to say, I think they did a splendid job. It really is a compelling TV drama, which I thought was very well written. The action pushes along nicely. Once they're on board the submarine, I think, you know, events, there's plenty of events to keep us interested and intrigued as to what's going on. So I thought it actually pretty well written drama, the good dialogue. I liked the story behind the whole thing.
Yes, the writing is very solid. It moves along and works quite well. I also really enjoyed the performances here. I think down to pretty well everyone in this, that whole crew and the few people we see not on the crew, they all really do, you know, fit what they should for this, and, you know, bring it off quite convincingly.
Yeah, I think they're splendid throughout. I mean, David Jason, obviously always watchable. Everybody loves him, but he is very good in this. Tony Haygarth is good as the retired engineer, Alan Cassidy.
He's very good, actually.
Yeah, terrific stuff. And I really liked Ian Poulston Davis as Commander Travis, who has to do this, you know, become increasingly apparently deranged and possessed by the original captain. And he's got this secret mission. And he, you know, as the sort of villain of the piece, I think he does a very good job. But everybody's terrific, you know, Julian Wadham as Captain Burns, and as you say, all the sort of members of the crew and the brass hats back in the British Naval Intelligence Office. It's great throughout in terms of acting.
Yeah, Julian Wadham, in some sense, doesn't get a whole lot to do in this, but he makes something of what he has and makes it a character you want to watch, and a character who's quite convincing in what he says and what he does.
Yeah, he does. I think he does a very good job as a convincing, you know, British naval submarine captain. He's great. But yeah, he does, I suppose, in a way, gets slightly brushed aside by David Jason and Ian Poulston Davis as the two opposing forces that are going to battle for the soul of the Scorpion.
I really like the direction and cinematography in this. I think it looks beautiful. They do some great things with lighting on the submarine, where they have, you know, their red emergency lighting at times, and they have things done in sort of shadowy and quite, you know, claustrophobic type ways in how they're doing things. They also have certain things where we are getting glimpses of the past, the World War II things, or even things sort of thematically strongly connecting into the World War II themes, we drop into black and white. And it's done in a way that is not jarring. It's quite a little more subtle than it might be, but it's very effective.
Yes, I like yourself, I loved the way it looked. And I think, obviously, they had a huge advantage of being able to spend some of the budget on using the S-33 submarine set in Malta. And the sequences on board the submarine, they're claustrophobic, atmospheric. It looks like the real deal. If you don't like the idea of being trapped in confined spaces below the waves, this show might be a bit of a trigger for you. But it's terrifically done. I loved it. I mean, the CGI of boats beneath the sea firing at each other, perhaps slightly less convincing, but I allowed it because the rest of it was just so good to look at.
Yeah, and they don't rely more than they need to on the CGI. It's used a little bit here and there, but you know, the things on board the submarine, that's actually most of the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they really do take advantage of what they have. And just about every setting where you see the characters is really well done. You know, when you when they come and find the professor, he's in Malta, and they shot it on location in Malta. And, you know, they did a lot of things that worked very well. So I really quite like the look of this.
And, of course, it's a show that's got a great mystery. And as we've hinted, that mystery is not entirely solved. There's plenty of unanswered questions. And I really like that aspect of it. I really liked the idea that there was something happening. The past was breaking through. The crew was starting to act strangely. It's never really completely explained what's happening and how it's happening. And David Jason as, you know, Jack Hardy having to resist it. I liked it. It builds up to an ending which we won't give away, but I did like the ending. I found it sort of satisfying and moving at the same time.
Yeah, there's lots of mystery and lots of tension in here. And it plays off the idea of the differences between World War II and the Cold War, where World War II was a shooting war where they were going after the enemy vessels and destroying them and so on, where the Cold War had different tensions. It wasn't working that way. And you had the tension of the difference where you don't want to have World War II behavior sneaking into the Cold War and, you know, causing this terrible escalation.
Yeah, terrific stuff. Very well handled throughout, I thought. You know, quite an impressive show. I suppose we should look for the negatives. I mean, I've mentioned my slight problem with the CGI. Was there anything about the show that you didn't like so much, Brian?
Well, there is one thing I have to note. What was your count of the number of female characters in this one?
If there were any, I missed them. This is an entirely male show, I believe.
Yeah, I counted zero, which is a little unfortunate in some ways. It's understandable in that your 1981 and 1943 submarine crews are going to be male, and it would be a little odd to vary from that. But it would have been nice if in the British intelligence groups or one of these things, if they could have varied that and had one or two female characters in this. So that was something I noticed that was a little bit of a disappointment.
Yes, I think we get a picture of David Jason's wife, and that's about it, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So there is that. The computer graphics didn't bother me as much as it did you, I think, because it was such a small thing, and it was very clear and easy to see what was happening in all of those sequences. So really, I have very little that's negative to say about this.
Okay, well, that brings us to our recommendations. And Brian, what did you think about Ghost Boat? What are you going to say to our listeners?
Well, I will definitely recommend this one. It is a very well-made show. The performances, the story, it's all very strong. I really liked how it blends the spooky ghost story type things without going too far into supernatural stuff. It takes those types of elements and blends them in with both Cold War and World War II types of ideas, which is a very unusual thing. I think this is actually our first submarine show that we're talking about as a topic on British Invaders. I know there's some stuff in the Gerry Anderson world that get into that too, but for a full discussion, I think this is the first time we're doing that. And yeah, it's a very strong show, so I would say definitely recommended. This is one to pick up and watch.
Okay, I think, because our listeners probably can tell as we've gone along, this is going to be a double thumbs up from us this time on British Invaders. We both loved this show. It was, in a way, an unexpected surprise when I watched it. I would again remind Region 2 UK viewers that it's available for a mere £4 on Amazon. And I think for your £4, you get a pretty good show for Halloween. Interestingly, looking back at the two shows I've enjoyed most this year, they've both been very well cheaply priced. The other one being, of course, Wallace and Gromit, which is a superb show. But here is another unassuming little stunner. And you may not have picked up on it when it came out in 2006. So do yourselves a favour, spend £4, get yourself a DVD and watch it sometime over the Halloween period. Ghostboat is really quite terrific.
Absolutely. So, in summary, in 1981, in the midst of the Cold War, the HMS Scorpion, a World War II submarine, mysteriously reappears, and it appears to be identical to how it would have been in 43, with no aging or even decay of the batteries, but there is no human remains and no signs of the original crew. And the naval intelligence officers are interested in this and want to investigate it. They find Jack Hardy, who is the only survivor of the original World War II crew of the Scorpion. They find Alan Cassidy, who worked on building and designing the Scorpion originally. And with a new crew, they decide to recreate the original voyage of the Scorpion. And, of course, this having ghost story elements in it, things start to go wrong with this, and very strange things happen, leading to a very interesting and mysterious and tense conclusion.
Yes, well summarized, Brian, and terrific stuff. As ever, if you agree or disagree with our take on Ghost Boat, do please get in touch with us. And of course, come back next time. We are going to a show that, another ITV show, a co-production between their Scottish TV network with a US production company. It's an animation. It is Sherlock Holmes in the 22nd Century, a show from around about 1999. And one that's been requested, I think, a couple of times by the Facebook group, Brian.
Yes, I think so. And it's definitely a fun one, so it'll be good to look at that next time. So until next time, you can find us at BritishInvaders.com. And we have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find us there.
Yes, or come and join in the fun at vognetwork.com. That's the Voice of Geeks internet radio network, where you'll find British Invaders on Mondays and Tuesdays, but you'll also find many other great shows for your listening pleasure. The home of great geeky shows, the Voice of Geeks network, vognetwork.com.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. And inevitably, it's Commander Eamon in England calling all hands to dive, dive, dive.